Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of the podcast. I'm your host, Brian Keane, best-selling author of the book, The Fitness Mindset and Rewire Your Mindset, here to help you by deconstructing expert guests on all things health, fitness, and mindset. Today's guest is a round two appearance of Steve Griffin. Steve was on the podcast last January, the 13th of January, 2020, in episode 259, Steve Griffin on losing over 100 pounds in 8 months by tracking calories and counting steps. Today's episode is a long overdue follow-up. So I know a lot of you have already listened to Steve's first appearance. I got amazing feedback from that episode. So if you haven't listened to it, I definitely recommend at the end of today's podcast, go back and check it out. I think anybody at the start of a weight loss journey in particular, it is absolute must listen in terms of what to prioritize, what to focus on, and how to kind of drown out the noise of the silly stuff that can become a distraction when you're on a weight loss or fat loss journey. Today's episode is very conversational. This is the first in-person podcast that I've recorded. I do most of my podcasts through Skype and online, but for friends such as Steve, we normally do them in person, but because of COVID restrictions, we haven't been able. So this is our first socially distanced podcast, sitting on the opposite ends of two tables and recording today's episode. We build on some of the things we talked about in that first podcast, what he's been up to since he was on his last appearance, falling off track during COVID and how he got back on track. And I know this in particular was something I wanted to talk to Steve about. Me and Steve talk quite frequently on Instagram through DM or through Messenger. And one of the things that one of the things we wanted to talk about in today's episode was falling off track and then getting back on it. And Steve had a very bad rebound off the back of a few injuries and then off the normal COVID, where it's just very difficult to keep motivation, stay on top of your training, stay on top of your nutrition. So how he bounced back from that. We talk about the difference between motivation and discipline when it comes to weight loss. I think this is so valuable for anybody, and understanding the difference between motivation, which is the feeling and emotion you have, and discipline and your habits. So what you do frequently, regardless of how you feel. We also talk about focusing on fat loss and body composition compared to just weight loss. One of the biggest things, and I talk about this in today's episode, because I physically recorded the first episode with Stephen, we physically recorded this in person, and noticeably how muscular he's got and how lean he's got and how good his physique is now that he's switched into more resistance style training as opposed to just hitting his step count. So I think that's a nice one for anybody that is in that next phase where you've hit your body fat level goal or your weight loss goal, and now you're looking to tone up or you're looking to build lean muscle tissue or get fitter. I think it's a really nice transition to how Steve goes from one to the other and how you can do it too. We talk about why being overweight doesn't make you a bad person and how to build confidence and self-worth, and how at the end of the day, a lot of a weight loss journey is down to your mindset and the importance of your inner circle and who you're following on social media. So how to tune out the noise from people who don't support you on your journey. I think this is one I connect with, and Tommy, who was with us also socially distanced in the corner, who was recording this, we all connected with this particular part of the episode. Even though Steve was talking about weight loss, I think it's applicable to anybody, because you can connect to being misled by misinformation or people who didn't potentially have your best interest at heart. So that's just that's actually not a very quick introduction, but that's an introduction for today's podcast episode. I love this. It's gone a little bit longer than normal, just over the hour mark, as we tend to go a little bit longer when I'm just catching up with people or people who I'm friends with. So I hope you enjoyed today's episode as much as I enjoyed recording it. Steve Griffin on losing 110 pounds, motivation versus discipline for weight loss, and building self-worth. Enjoy. Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of the podcast. I'm delighted today to be joined, his second appearance, and this is the first podcast that I've recorded in person since COVID. We're 2 meters apart on opposite sides of a very long table, and Steve is trying not to touch it with his elbows so that we don't hear a crackle in the background. Today's guest, Steve Griffin. You may recognize his voice from last year's episode, episode 259 on the 13th of January, Steve Griffin on losing over 100 pounds in 8 months by tracking calories and counting steps. Today's podcast, we're going to be touching on some of the things to do with weight loss, on changing body composition, what he's been up to over the last year or so, and some of the things that he uses to push through his training plateaus, his nutrition plateaus, and his weight loss plateaus. Steve, welcome back to the podcast.
Thank you for having me. Yeah, you're overselling me quite a lot there, but thank you.
Mate, I loved this episode last year. We got such great feedback from it, and I've been dying to do a round two for ages, but now is a perfect time because we're kind of coming into that post-January phase, kind of early February, where it's very easy for people who had motivation for the last few weeks to start falling off. So we're going to start diving into some of that as we go on. But before we do that, talk to us. Tell us what you've been up to for the last year, because you've been doing a lot with your own journey. You've been doing loads of podcasts, but kind of give us a little bit of a synopsis what the last 12, 13 months have been like.
Yeah, you know, there's been a lot of ups and downs. I suppose after I did the podcast with you last year, I probably had my biggest down of the journey so far. I gained 12, maybe 13 kilos again. Literally had absolutely fuck no moment where I stood on a scale the 4th, I will never forget, it was the 4th of July, stood on the scale, looked down, saw 123 and I went, fuck, absolutely not. And just decided that day, I was like, no, I'm going to get back at it again. Like you said, I've been whoring about doing podcasts. Yeah, working away, just, you know, doing as best as I could with COVID and everything. It's not really an excuse, even though I treated it as an excuse for a couple of months. But yeah, just diving into the deep end and doing my bit.
Let's park on that for a second in terms of July, because you've come so far and you've came so far, and I think it's a beautiful spin back because of where you are now. Like, this is the first time I've seen you in, geez, I'd say nearly a year because of COVID. And I literally was blown away when I saw you, because you look the best you've ever looked. And we're going to dive into that later on about how your weight hasn't dropped that much, but your body composition is completely different now. But talk about July. What was the thing that set you back? Was it the COVID? Was it just falling back into bad habits? And the reason I ask that question is because I never want people to hear of a journey like yours, you know, like mine, when it comes to, say, business or ultramarathons, or, you know, whatever end of the spectrum people are on or whatever their goals are. Because having this misconception that success is this linear path upwards is not true at all, that there's steps back for steps forward. What happened in July to set you back? Or prior to July?
Yeah, no, you're totally right. And I try as much as I can to show on Instagram that it's not, you know, this smooth sailing the whole time. There's a lot of storms, there's a lot of waves. There was like a series of, unfortunately, it sounds like some sort of movie, like of little events that kind of all, you know, they felt like little losses. So I was running a lot. And in November, December 2019, I did a couple of half marathons, 30Ks. I ended up getting injured. And I had a holiday booked away for New Year's. And then when I came back, I had surgery. And, you know, I got injured. So I was sitting around, couldn't run, couldn't really walk that much because my leg was in bits. Gained a couple of pounds that way because I was just lazy and I was sitting around. And that's what I used to do. And I was playing Xbox and all these bits and snacking away and not really conscious about what I was doing. And then came January and I went on holidays. And I went totally like, I'm going to have loads of delicious Polish cake and eat what I want because that's what you do on holidays. Whereas, you know, now I come back from a thing like that and I go, okay, I'll reset a little bit. Trisha says it a lot about just resetting. I didn't do that because I had the surgery pretty much straight after. And that just laid me up for 8-12 weeks. I was doing nothing, couldn't. I wasn't allowed to do anything. And just over that period of time, put on a lot of weight. I kind of convinced myself that I wasn't enjoying training. And I suppose in a little way, I wasn't a little. I wouldn't say I fell out of love with training, but I stopped enjoying it as much. And then COVID came and things started to close. And I was like, ah, sure, the gym, sure, feck it. If I can't go to the gym, what's the point? And I used it as an excuse. And I'm a big person for either make moves or make excuses. And I made excuses that time. And in hindsight, I'd call myself out on my bullshit. Like, there was a shitload of stuff I could have done because I'm doing it now. But at the time, I guess I just didn't want to. And then I can't remember what exactly set me to stand on the scale again. I don't know, was it a t-shirt that was ill-fitting or what? But I stood on the scale, saw, I can't remember, it was a 122 or 123. And I thought to myself, I was like, I was 155, 156. I got down to 105, 106. I was like, why am I letting it go this way again? I was like, just snap out of it. And literally that day, went shopping, went back and bought the basics that I used to buy with Paul, the jelly pots, the Kinder Fingers, the chicken, the potato, you know, little things. And just went back to the most simple basics I had and just reset and went at it again.
Did you... And the reason I ask this is because we're very similar from what you've said there, that I tend to go all or nothing. Did you, from that point on, just get back straight on it? Or was it a gradual thing? Or did you just say, right, July, 4th of July, you said? Like, from the 5th onwards, it was back to normal routine. Is that how it looked?
Yep. Next morning, back at it. And that was the first time I was super disciplined. found ways of being motivated along this. But that was the first time that maybe I wasn't massively motivated, but I discovered discipline. Like, I discovered just getting up and doing it. And yeah, I'm not saying that motivation doesn't have a place, it absolutely does. But I found the motivation in the session after I had got up to do it, that maybe there was mornings I was like, oh, I'll just stay in bed, or I won't bother, or it's my day off, I'll stay in bed a bit longer. But because he had to book sessions at the time, I was like, oh, I'm booked in at 10, just go and get it done. You know, and during the session, I was like, oh, I'm fucking delighted I did this. This is way better than staying in bed. But, you know, there was a second there where it was like a seesaw, and it could have gone either way. And I got into 5, maybe 6 days of training a week. And I laugh the whole time because, like, Shane Walsh, who you've had, used to, like, just message me when I put the workouts up on Instagram. And he'd be like, volume, volume. And he's like, just take a day off. Well, yeah, it's like, no, no, you're going to hurt yourself. It's like, nah, I'll be okay. But I re-found that love for training. I started doing push-pull legs. A friend put me on to push-pull legs, and I just loved it. I found I could train more often. I enjoyed the lifts. And again, I preach the whole time, finding something you enjoy makes it sustainable. And I loved that kind of training. And yeah, the discipline had kicked in, and I was just doing it. I was doing it for the sake of getting to a point. You know, it wasn't so much, and I'm not saying you shouldn't enjoy training, but I was doing it to get somewhere. I wasn't doing it for right now. I was doing it for, you know, this is where I am, that's where I want to go, and this is what I have to do to get there.
The training is your vehicle for getting from A to Z. When did that change? When did you start enjoying training? Was it because of the addiction to the progress, or was it just the endorphins from the training, combination of both? Oh, because I ask that is, there's people listening to this podcast, and I find there's about an 80-20 split, weirdly, because this is a fitness podcast, health podcast, mindset podcast, that 20% of people are like me, like you, that they probably a little bit more than 20% that love training. They do it because they love it. But there's a lot of people who are doing it for an ends to a means. Now, I get it. I run for the same reason. You know, I run to train for ultramarathons. I don't enjoy the process. So there's people in that bracket. But when did you flip? Like, how long were you into your journey before you started to enjoy training? Or is that a more recent thing even?
Well, in fairness, I enjoyed the training early. I enjoyed it because it wasn't, I can't say that it wasn't difficult, but it wasn't super, super difficult for me. I had trained for a large part of my life anyways.
That wasn't
I
was your problem, we talked about.
Yeah, I, like, I played football, I played rugby, I was into training anyways. But I had got to such a, maybe not a low point, but an unhappy place with training, that I had convinced myself I was unhappy with, that getting back into it was just brilliant. You know, and I say it the whole time, the gym's my happy place. And herself laughs, my mother laughs at me, and they're like, there's a lot of other things in life. It's like, yeah, but that makes me, like, even yesterday, I got some gear from my gym, and I went lifting last night at work. I was like, oh my God, this is brilliant. When did it change? Within the first week, I was so happy to get back. You know, the minute I actually started doing it, I was like, oh fuck, I love this. Yeah. I was like, I've missed this. But you're right, though. It did kind of get to a place where I started really enjoying maybe the aesthetic or the physical changes I could see. I was always quite motivated by, say, lifts. So what was my lift getting better? Was my form getting better? That was a big thing. I got with Paul checking my form.
He's a form whore.
I was a dick lifter. I really was. Because I'd go and deadlift, and I didn't give two flying fucks how it came off the ground. But as long as it came up and my shoulders were back, then it was a good lift. I had no respect for my lower back whatsoever. Whereas Paul was like, drop the weight, get your back right, get everything right, and in time, the improved form will get you there. But I started enjoying, you know, stupid things. And it's going to sound really stupid. I started enjoying seeing biceps or veins or my calves pumping on leg day. And I'm like, I like where this is going. So I was like, fuck it, I'm going to keep at it. I'm going to keep at it hard. And then COVID completely fucked that up again.
Talk about July and the summer and rediscovering the love for training. Because you mentioned their push-pull legs. And something I've subconsciously done for a long time, and now consciously I'm more aware of because of the amount of people I've worked with over the years, is about switching my training. Like, I have really bad training ADHD. For anyone that follows any of my training, I could be CrossFitting 1 week, bodybuilding another week, S&C another week, running 100 miles another week. Like, I swap and change. But the reason for that is because I get bored if I train the same way all the time. How did you rediscover the love? Was it a case of experimenting with different types of training, or was it just finding something that was, you know, different, that just mixed it up? How did you rediscover the love? And the reason I bring that up is there's people listening now who are at that point where, either they're not enjoying the training, or it's not that they don't love it, they're just it's not driving them to go and get it done now, which a new program can do. Like when you sign up with a coach or a program and they put you on something new, your motivation levels can go through the roof. You know, we'll get back to motivation versus discipline later, but motivation can go through the roof. How did you rediscover that love for training?
I went and tried it. I wasn't going to rediscover that love sitting on the couch. It was going to come from doing. I was lucky enough, I had a friend, she's a PT at home, and she just kind of said one day, like, would you do push-pull legs, mix it up a little bit for yourself? And I was like, okay. And I discovered that with push-pull legs, I could do it, I could do two cycles pretty much a week. Mm-hmm. And I was recovering quite well because I wasn't, I suppose, kind of crossing over between the same muscle groups the whole time. Whereas, I'm not saying what I was initially on was a bit basic, but it was to get me off the couch.
Yeah.
Do you know, and I remember Paul telling me a long time ago, it doesn't really matter what you do. If you walk around the gym for an hour with 2 10 kg dumbbells in your hands, it's better than what the fuck you were doing. Yeah. Whereas, and I was only chatting to him recently because we kind of unofficially restarted before COVID shut everything down again. And it's a different type of training. It's a much more concentrated. Whereas with the push-pull, I got a nice mix of the heavy lifts and, you know, the good ego pumps of kind of going, this is good. I'm liking the big benches. I'm liking the deadlifts. I'm liking, you know, the big squats again. But it was just going and doing. I tell people, it's like, when they're like, oh, I couldn't do what you're doing. It's like, you don't have to. You don't have to do push-pull legs. You don't have to do CrossFit. I don't do CrossFit because I'm still over 100 kilos and I can't do pull-ups. And I'm like,
nah. Those kipping pull-ups, though, they're pretty cool.
Yeah, I can do those.
Asterisks with the inverted commas, they're not pretty cool. They look silly.
Was it you that called them like fucking the air or
I was
something?
Like, it's like shagging the air. Yeah, no, and I get so much shit from CrossFitters with that because I love CrossFit, similar to like our fitness watch conversations we've had. Like, I love CrossFit. I used to do CrossFit in London, and every time I put up, I'm like, well, your kipping pull-ups are silly. I'm like, it looks like you're shagging the air. I'm like, I was like, don't come at me with something else. I'm like, you can't compare them to strict form pull-ups. And they're like, oh yeah, but they're kipping, you get more reps. I'm like, yeah, still doesn't change the fact you look like you're shagging the air, just saying.
I always thought it was like doing the worm, but like vertical. It's like,
yeah, I can see that. It's fucking, it's breaking it out on the dance floor.
But it's just doing what you like, you know. It really, okay, yes, maybe there will be certain exercises and stuff depending on what you want. If you want to be Mr. Olympia, I don't know if CrossFit's going to do it for you. It's not going to have the vibe. It's not going to have the weight. But if you don't really want to be Mr. Olympia and you like pushing yourself and being a big sweaty mess at the end of your session, CrossFit's fucking fantastic. You know, so it's totally what you like and what you want to do. Sustainability for the vast majority of journeys is the most important thing, and enjoyment, you know, but enjoyment and sustainability kind of go hand in hand, especially for me. If I was enjoying my diet, which I hate using, but the diet I implemented in the lifestyle, I was more likely to stick to it. Do you know, if I cut out bread, oh god, if I cut out bread, it would not go very far. I'd just be like, nah, fuck it, I'm having toast and scones.
Do you find that when you're not training, diet goes out the window, or can you not train? Because I know you're big on your step count. We talked about this on the last podcast and you're still doing it. Mm. Can you find that you don't necessarily have to train as long as you stay on top of your diet, or for you, do they go hand in hand?
Both. They both kind of come into it. I can see why, and I've seen it myself, that there's days when I don't train. I said it to you actually before we started, like, it's like the phone battery. Mm. When I train, or when I go and get my steps at the start of the day, I find that the discipline kicks in. I've gone and done the physical thing, now to do the other half of it. So my phone battery is like supercharged. It's like fucking nuclear power phone battery. And for the day, I'm, you know, I hate saying it, I'm good. You know, and I kind of consciously eat properly and I consciously act in the way that I want to get me where I'm going. Whereas when I train, I'm just, the days I train, I'm just walking around floating on air. And you'll probably understand this, and a lot of people who enjoy their training so much will get it, especially now with COVID. I think people have just a realization of how important for body, for mind, for everything it was. I'm not quite a different person on days I train, but it's the endorphin kick. You're just there and you're like smiling and everybody's like, the fuck's wrong with you? It's like, just happy.
It makes it easier though. One of the things I talk about in Rewire Your Mindset, because I did the Rewire Your Mindset course, but Steve was one of the proofreaders for the book. Yeah, one of the people I sent to Ted before it went out, and you're like, yeah, this is your book. Get it out there. And I was like, awesome. But one of the things I talk about there is the pillars of self-discipline. And for me, it's getting up at 5 a.m. and it's running. And similar to what you said, getting your step count in or getting your workout in early, self-discipline is like a muscle. Like, it gets better the more you work it, and the more, and if you start your day with it and anchor something at the start of your day that is disciplined, it makes being disciplined with your nutrition easier. Like, it's building upon these blocks. You talk about motivation here and you talked about discipline there. explain the difference between the two, because I think there's a lot of people who get those two things either confused, mixed up, or else don't connect them together. Talk about your relationship with discipline versus motivation, or motivation versus discipline.
Yeah, it's a funny one. And I think a lot of people have their own definition of it. Personally, I suppose I probably relied on motivation for the first part of my journey. The motivation that came from the bad pictures, from the nasty comments, from the years of maybe hurt and losses and stuff like that. And it kept driving me on. I told you that I remembered my old colleague's comment for months and months, and it drove me through sessions. But then come July, it wasn't really the thing. I wasn't depending on a YouTube video to make me go, oh, I'm so going to smash this session, or a song or anything like that. It was, I'm getting up and I'm doing this. So I was kind of self-motivating rather than looking for an external to motivate me. And like I said, the discipline, it was just a case of getting up and doing it. Like, say I work, so I get 4 days on, 4 days off. And on my 4 days off, I'm up, first thing out, rain jacket gone. It could be really easy. Like the last few days, it has been piss and rain. It'd be really easy to just stay in bed and be like, I'm not that motivated today. It's like, is it that you're not motivated, or you're not disciplined enough to go and do it? Like you're pretty waterproof. You know, you're not just going to soak it all up and turn like SpongeBob and get huge. You know, you're going to be fine if you walk in the rain for an hour. You're going to get your steps and you'll be grand. You go and take a shower after, which is actually water. I hate to break it to you. It's like, you know, your solution for being wet is taking a shower. It's like, okay. But yeah, it's a funny one. I'm not saying that motivations aren't important. It obviously is, because motivation was when I stood on the scale and I didn't like it and I was motivated to go and change. But then discipline kicked in the next day and I just went and did it. It plays a part. But I think people depend too much on it. People look for motivation. Like, I get asked a lot, either something along the lines of motivate me. It's like, no, can't. I'll try, but I can't. You know, that's something you have to decide on yourself, whether it motivates you or not. But I think you have to do. Sometimes you just have to do. And whilst you're doing, like I said, you might see aesthetic changes. You might see things. You might go, I'm actually quite good at this. I'm a good runner, or I'm a good deadlifter. And you might go, I wonder how far this can go. And that might motivate you. But if you keep looking down the back of the couch there for the motivation, you're not going to find it. Yeah. So sometimes you just got to go and do.
How did you go about building your discipline? And I'm aware that the awareness of it is the start. That, and realizing that motivation, the analogy I always use for motivation, it's like if you're paddling a boat, that discipline, your habits are the actual paddling. Motivation is the wind that you can't really guarantee when the wind has come, but it's brilliant when it does. But that doesn't actually get anything done. It's your discipline and your daily habits. How did you build up that discipline? Obviously, distinguishing the difference between motivation and discipline was the first. Was it just a case of, I'm going to build in this habit and routine until it's automatic? Or what was that process like for you with the step count, particularly the training, the nutrition? Because it's all the same in terms of how you do it. What did it look like for you?
Yeah, you kind of nailed it there. It was, like I said, you had to book gym times. So I booked the gym time. I got it done pretty much the same time every day. So I had a normal-ish routine. I ate. I'm a pretty bland eater. I eat the same things pretty much every day. It doesn't bother me. I'm not one of these people that has to be like, oh, it needs to be different every day, and it needs to be, you know, Michelin star stuff. I'm like, making chili, fine, that works for me. Or chicken and sweet potato, I'm like, that's cool too. I kept it pretty much, you know, I suppose the same, even keelter all the way through. So I was training at a similar time every day. So it was either, say, 10 a.m. when I was off, or it was 7 p.m. when I was working and finishing up. I ate my meals at the same time. The accountability I got from my circle was big. So certain people, like, you know, did you train? I had 4 or 5, say, fitness people, and we'd be chatting. They're like, oh yeah, I did legs. I'm like, oh yeah, I didn't train today. It's like, yes, I'm going to though. But yeah, the circle was big. But like, again, I had external things like the likes of David Goggins. Like, that guy just flipping resonates in my head the whole time. And that dude is disciplined. He's crazy, but he's also crazy disciplined.
Next level.
Oh, he's next level, a lot of shit. Yeah, it was just a case of, I suppose, building the habits of discipline. So it was a case of getting up on time, getting out, going to the gym, doing the sesh, coming back and eating right. And then, like, one good day as such turned to two, turned to a week, turned to a fortnight, turned to a month. And before I knew it, I was 2 or 3 months into this, and I was, you know.
And that can equally go the other way.
Absolutely. You can have a bad day, 2 bad days. Like, it's like the fuck it button thing. You have a bad Friday night, then it's a shitty Saturday, and it's Sunday, oh, I'm sure the week's fucked now.
Yeah.
You know, I'll start tomorrow, and this magical Monday shit, I never got it, and I still don't get it. But yeah, I think, like I said, I hate repeating it, but it's just doing. Once you start doing it, I think people think it's quite difficult, And
is difficult. Yeah,
the start can be very difficult. But like the Martin McDonald says, weight loss is easy. That doesn't, or simple, but it doesn't mean it's easy.
Yes.
Yeah. You know, on paper it's simple math. Yeah. But there's a lot of other shit that goes along with any kind of journey, not just weight loss. Whether you're trying to get bigger or leaner or whatever it is. But yeah, I think just doing, getting out and going doing.
You mentioned your meals there, and you're quite a bland eater. Similar to me, like I would eat the same thing every day. It's like anytime I'm chatting to Trish, you mentioned Trish earlier, like she's a fantastic chef, literally has like the best Instagram recipes, and I'm like, they all look great, but I'm probably not going to make that many of them, even though the stuff in her book is brilliant. I actually made a few of those recipes, they're lovely. But what are the nutritional fundamentals that you follow, like in the sense that you eat quite plain, but is there any like laws or fundamentals or principles that you follow? Because I know Paul is big on his principles. Paul Germany, who's been the history, been your coach. We talked about this in the first episode. What principles do you personally follow now when it comes to nutrition?
I'm quite bad at this. This is the part I've never really took to the whole macro and breaking it down, you know.
But talk about what you did. There's a lot of people who haven't, and that's why I think your story is great, because it shows that what you're doing for you is working.
Yeah, I probably eat too many carbs, which is probably going to be the thing, but like I'm awful simple when it comes to it. And you said Trish, and like you're so right, because I'd be like, look at her Instagram, I'm like, God, that looks nice. And then I look at my plate and it's like sweet potato, a bit of cod and broccoli and spinach. I'm like, mine doesn't look like that. Like, yeah. I could make that if I want to, I just don't want to. Yeah, look, I'm very, very basic. I'm not a big breakfast person, and I get quite a bit of flack for it. I don't know, the breakfast community is strong.
People love their breakfast.
Holy shit, yeah. People love cereal. And I'm just like, it doesn't really entertain me that much. There's only so many things I can have for breakfast. And I'm like, I don't particularly like super sugary cereals, nor do I think they'll best serve me. I'm like, okay, yeah, I can have a giant bowl of cornflakes or any other cereal.
Well, sponsored by Connex, yeah. No joke.
Or any other good cereal that's available in other supermarkets. But I'm like, lunch is more entertaining for me. Dinner is more entertaining for me. But if I do, I have my porridge. I throw a bit of chocolate and a bit of banana or something. My dinners are bland. My dinners are just, and I look at your stuff, I'm not saying your stuff is bland, but I'm like, that's the kind of stuff I eat.
That's why I posted up. I actually stopped posting up a lot of my food, because I'm like, it's so boring, it's bland. But then I'd get messages from you and other people who are like, oh, that's the way. I was like, oh, but that's what you're eating. I'm like, yep. I was like, it actually, it's quite straightforward. It's I can't do what Trish does. As an example, like I can't make food look like that. You know, I was like, I can make a workout out of anything. Give me a chair and a pillow and I can make a workout. Like, don't tell me what kind of workout you do with a chair and a pillow, but I can. But I can't make it anything with food look the way Trish makes it look. But I started posting those up so people would see that there's other options. So you're similar.
Totally. And I'm so intrigued as to the TikTok you're going to make out of the chair and the pillow. But like it's, I think you're kind of a product of environment. You know, you're a PT and a whole load of other fucking things. And Trish is a chef. I work, say, 12-hour shifts. I'm 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. When I come in at 7:30, I don't have time. I just don't. And that's why I meal prep. And then the stuff that I can put in two little lunch boxes and reheat in a microwave, the baby potatoes, the sweet potato, the chicken, the turkey, the beef, whatever it is. It's not that I have to keep it simple, but it makes my life a little bit easier if I can keep it simple. I tend to have like a snack pack at work. I found that has helped me immensely, because I can just throw this in the squad. I can throw it in the patrol
What's
car.
What's a snack pack?
Just like, you know, the little refrigerated lunch bag things. Yeah. I'll have that. I'll have some fruit. I'll have a protein bar. I'll have a bottle of water. And I don't know if you're pro or against them, but like a can of Monster or something. Yeah. I'll have them readily available so that if something happens at work, if I'm not able to get back to the station, if I'm caught out, and my only options, particularly now when a lot of things are closed, is a takeaway or going to the deli, mm-hmm. I can control what's in my bag. I know what the orange is. I know what's in everything that's in it. Whereas if I go to the deli, I'm kind of going, ooh, how much butter
especially
do they use?
If you're hungry.
Yeah, you make, I'm not saying bad decisions, but you might make decisions based on the noise coming from your stomach. You're like, I just got to eat something. And you pick up the big bag of potatoes and the big, roll. And next thing you know, you're having like a chicken fillet roll, which are pretty kind of nice in fairness. Mm-hmm. But again, not best serving to what I'm trying to do. So I suppose that's one thing I do that, not that I recommend, but if you're in a position like I am where, sometimes you can't control the environment you're going to be in. It's so handy. It's just like protein bar, and it doesn't have to be eaten today. Like, it's not going to go bad. The protein bar and the oranges, it's not going to go bad today if you don't eat it, but it's handy to have there.
The same thing. I think regardless of someone starting off versus 10, 15, 20 years of training experience with nutrition, I think it's such a great thing. Like I never leave home. I've got my laptop bag beside me here, and I've always got a protein shake in there with oats, almonds, and dark chocolate. Like things that can stay there for 6 months. But it's if you're out and about and you get hungry or you get stuck without food, it just means you're making a more supportive choice. And I think systems over willpower, you know, something I've talked about in the podcast in the past, it's so key for nutrition, regardless of whether you're trying to lose 200 pounds or whether you're trying to just maintain your energy levels through the day so you can be your most productive. For me, like my goal is not body composition, it's productivity during the day, or it's training for ultras or endurance events, but it's opposite ends of the same spectrum.
So what gets measured gets managed, and it's one of those things that there's two little mantras with food. What gets measured gets managed, and control the controllables. There's a certain amount of things you can control. There's a shitload of things out of your control. I can't control the rain, I can't control the sunshine, I can control what I eat largely, and if I can, then why wouldn't I? Do you know, it's one of those things you, like I said, make moves and make excuses. Oh, well, I had to eat this. It's no, you didn't. You could have made different decisions. You could have prepped a little bit better. And you hear the whole, I don't have time to prep. Yeah. I saw a video the other day. He's a South African bodybuilder. And it was like, I made 8 meals in 30 minutes. 8 different meals, everything cooking simultaneously. It's like, you don't got excuses. You're making excuses.
Yeah, prioritize. Like, you can. Like, that's the, I'm not sure if you listened to the episode with Robin Yvonne. January. I love Robin Yvonne. And that was such a great podcast that, you know, the only thing you have to give up in the new year is excuses. And Rob particularly, both of them are bouncing off each other, but Rob was talking about that you, when it comes to food, you have to decide, I'm going to make healthier food choices. Like, you can't let it be by feeling, or you can't say, I don't have time. It's if you can't prioritize it, that's cool. Like, and if you want to eat the bags of potato and you want to eat the takeaways, I'm like, have them, but, you know, cause and effect. Realize that that's probably why you're not losing weight now, or why you're not reducing body fat. I'm like, you know, this is my coaching philosophy, very similar to Paul. I'm like, eat whatever you want. I'm like, just realize that actions have consequences. I'm like, if you eat the full pizza, you're going to be in a massive calorie surplus, like, and that's not going to support your weight gain. I'm like, or your weight loss journey, or your fat loss. I'm like, if you're okay with that, by all means, eat it. But I think just being aware of that on the front end is very useful for people. One of the things I wanted to touch on, because I mentioned weight loss there, and I touched on this earlier about how you've stayed the same weight, because when we came on and talked last year, you'd lost over 100 pounds. It's about 110 pounds now, but you look completely different. Like, he's there. He's like, oh, shucks, in the background.
Oh, you.
But it's true. Like, when I saw you today, I was like, oh my God. Like, I was like, your shoulders, your chest, your face, everything just looks different. But that weight hasn't shifted, but body composition has. So touch on what you've been doing differently over these last 6 months, in particular 6-7 months from July, what you've been doing that's made that change, and then we'll kind of dive into the why you think that is, in the sense of it's reducing body fat versus losing weight. But what have you been doing differently over the last 6-8 months?
I've been doing a lot more resistance training, a lot more weight training. Like I said, I got into 5-6 day weeks of training.
Because you were running before this.
I was doing a lot of running before this. Yeah, so I was, like, I suppose I wasn't neglecting the gym, but I wasn't doing it as much. Because I was doing longer, well, they were longer for me, because I was never really a runner. So I was doing 10, 15, 20 Ks. And then I just couldn't be arsed to go to the gym because I was fucking destroyed and I had, like, blisters and stuff. And because of that, I suppose, I don't know a lot about the physiological sides of it, but I was probably not really stimulating the muscle, particularly in my upper body. Whereas now, for the last couple of months, I've been training pretty hard for resistance and stuff, and using a lot of weights. So it's two very different trainings. Not doing a lot of running right now, so I've gone total flip on it.
But you're hitting your step count.
I'm hitting the steps every day, yeah, and I'm hitting them.
What's your step count target, 10,000?
Yeah, but it's usually, I'd average more, about 14, 15. But again, it's not that I'm wary of saying it, but people will ask me, what's your step count? I'm like, well, this is what's achievable for me.
Yeah, it's so, you know, relative.
It's totally different. If you're like a walking tour guide, you could get a lot of steps and you could be fucking eclipsing me by 2 or 3 times. Do you know? Whereas I might have to sit in an office or in a squat car all day. So the step I get is the hour and a half I get to go for a walk in the evening. Yeah. But yeah, a lot more weight training. And then, like I said, it was push-pull legs, and then came to the, I suppose, informal working with Paul again, and it became more concentrated again. It was still 5 sessions a week, but it was different. It wasn't push-pull legs. It was lots of different little muscles, movements I'd never done. I was like, what the fuck's a Y-raise?
Paul is just, he loves that. He's technical. That's his biomechanics, what I think of Paul, and I send people to Paul all the time, because sometimes I'm a better fit for some people, he's a better fit for others, and vice versa. Paul, for people who have massive amounts of weight to lose, but equally on the other end of the spectrum, people who are form whores and love the technical analysis of biomechanics and why a certain percentage of a movement pattern on your shoulder here works your side delt versus your rear delt. Like, he's brilliant with that.
So many little things, like, and he got me to record him. I said, no, I was doing it anyways, but I wasn't really, you know, I was looking at it, but I didn't know what I was looking for. Whereas when I started sending them to him, he was like, well, you know, for the RDL, just maybe move your hips back a bit more and concentrate more on that. Because at the minute, it looks more like a deadlift. And again, it was just little tiny things. And I was like, this is making a big difference. All of a sudden, I feel this in my arse significantly more. And I was like, oh, this hurts.
Got to fill out those jeans.
Good kind of hurt. Yeah, the dump truck.
Did you change your diet when you switched more towards resistance training? Or did it stay just consistently the same for the last 12, 18, 24 months?
The protein probably got bumped up.
Yeah, I'd imagine, because I would imagine your recovery wouldn't have been as good on, because you have to be, with resistance training, you do have to match your protein intake, because otherwise you're just aching all the time.
Yeah, I know those feels. There's that horrible feeling. Do you ever train like glutes or hamstrings so much where it hurts to sit?
Yeah.
Like if you sat on a wooden chair, leaned against a counter, you're like, oh my God, my ass hurts. But yeah, Paul bumped up the protein a bit.
What food sources? Any particular ones or just...
I'd be quite fond of fish. Anyways, I'd be a fish person. Chicken, turkeys, beefs. Whilst I'm a bland eater, I'd eat anything.
Yeah.
But like, throw a load of stuff on a plate, I'll eat it. You know, like dead simple, break the plate up in fours or three, and I'll eat it really. I'm not picky, so I'll get my protein source from anything. I'm big on vegetarian stuff at the minute. Yeah. A lot of these, there's probably cons to them too, but you know, you see like the soy protein, say burgers, sauce, those kind of things. Quite liking those at the minute. I think it's nice to mix it up too, you know, provided that it's fitting your targets. It's nice to just keep it a little bit interesting.
It's different amino acid profile as well. Like, it's just...
You've lost me.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's fair. But it's keeping things mixed up. Like, there's no better or worse food. There's looking for, right, this is the best practice. So, like, chicken would always be a better, quote-unquote, better food choice than a soya burger because of the amino acid profile. But I'm like, look at all these other things to consider. Do you prefer a soy burger? Will you stick to that long term? Like, it has other amino acids that are higher than that would be in chicken. So, you know, you might feel better with this food. You know, so there's lots of things to consider. So any one size fits all. And I think we try and dispel that a lot on this podcast when I bring on vegan advocates and vegetarians and paleo people and keto people. And you're hearing the different viewpoints. It's very much what it's about. Well, where square pegs, square holes. What's a good fit for you? And experiment until you find that. You mentioned Paul there. You mentioned David Goggins earlier. So Paul, kind of virtual / one-to-one, because he's in Vietnam now, obviously. David Goggins very heavy on the virtual side. You know, I know we communicate a lot. You've got Shane Walsh and people as well. How important is your inner circle when it comes to maintaining and staying on track? And one of the misconceptions I think people have, and I get this a lot when I talk about mentors, where people will be like, oh, I need a mentor. They're like, you're always talking about mentors. I'm like, I'm talking about a book I've read 15 times. Like, I've read Charlie Munger's Poor Charlie's Almanac 12 or 13 times. I'm like, so I consider him a mentor, because I'm like, I'm just re-listening or rereading those words over and over again. And I think people can confuse the mentor side and the inner circle side with who you physically been around, who you digitally been around. How or what's been the importance, if you consider it important, of being around the right people, say, versus before to where you are now? Because you have a lot of, because you're very uplifting, you're very positive, you know, like, I love your company. Like, anytime we're chatting, you know, we're always bouncing off one another, we're very similar energies. But how has that impacted your ability to stay on track or stay motivated, stay inspired, stay disciplined? Or has it had no impact that you're able to do your thing regardless of who's around you? What's that look like for you?
Yeah, firstly, thank you. I do quite enjoy the chats. They go weird places, but I like the chats. Please don't spit your water out. So I suppose the circle for me was utmost importance. But there was a bit down the road where I started to maybe split my circle. So I had the physical and I had the circle that I maybe consume, like the Instagram circle. I maybe not curate. Curate might be the wrong word, but I kind of had a look at my Instagram feed. And I didn't unfollow too many people, but I maybe muted certain.
That's the best feature ever on Instagram.
Great feature, because, you know, when you're 155 kilos, whilst every now and again, you know, search person might have a good post that might help you, you don't want to be seeing his six-pack abs five times a day and going, why don't I look like that? What's wrong with me? Yeah. But yeah, the importance of the circle. And I heard something not that long ago. It was like, the people that are around you the most don't have to understand your journey. It's not theirs to understand. And it's kind of the same. I'm not saying my family aren't supportive. They're massively supportive. And my better half's massively supportive. My brothers, my workmates. But this isn't their thing.
Yeah.
Do you know, they're not going to the gym to do this. They're not the ones that weigh 155 kilos. They don't know where I've been or where I want to go as such. Whereas then I chat to fitness people. I chat to, you know, yourself and Shane and Paul. And it's a totally different conversation. But like I said, I have the Instagram circle. I have the real life circle. And it's an accountability thing. It's motivational for a large part. I love certain people on Instagram. Like, there's certain influencers, celebrity, fitness celebrities, I don't know what you want to call them. I just love following them because you watch them, you go, that's either, you know, very intelligent what they've said, it's educational, it's motivating, or you see them and you're like, that's quite an interesting movement, I might try that. Mm-hmm. But again, the importance of who you're around, whether actually physically or just looking at, like, people's screen time now, especially when they're at home and they're sitting around, it's quite high. And I'm one of those people, I'm brutal. My phone's like an extension of my hand. But yeah, it's so important because they can drain you or they can pick you up. And, you know, the decision's yours. I mean, you don't have to totally alienate people.
Yeah.
You know, and when I started this, I said to you before, you know, there was social norms in work where you get chips on a certain shift, you get carvery lunch, and then I'd go home and I'd have another fucking dinner anyways. Yeah. So I didn't need both of them. But that was the done thing. And I thought I'd have to distance myself completely from these people. But I just started making better decisions myself. Instead of having the carvery, I had to maybe make a more balanced decision on the lunch because I didn't need the big, massive gravy, chips, Sunday rolls thing every single day. But instead of being afraid to cut people out, I just maybe changed where I valued the opinions coming from and the information. That was a huge, the information was a big part. Where I took information from and advice. That was a big part of the revisiting of my circle.
Expand on that, because I think there's a lot of people listening, because I know I've done content not completely dissimilar to this idea on my philosophy of, you know, don't take advice from someone you wouldn't switch positions with. Like, that's true in 99 out of 100 cases. You know, I use, you know, Jane down the street that is 3 stone overweight giving you diet advice on the Special K diet. I'm like, Jane might be lovely and the funniest, nicest person ever and in a loving relationship, so like, take marriage advice from her, but she's 3 stone overweight. Well, don't be taking diet advice from her. I use the example of when people offer me business advice, and I still get this from family members. Like, I laugh every time, but you tune it out. I've got family members who have worked, you know, teaching jobs or office jobs for the last 30 years, and they're like, you should do this with business. And I'm like, thanks. I was like, yep, you're working 9 to 5 for somebody for the last 20 years. I'm like, by all means, you just nod and smile. You know, you get better at that. But there was a time when I wasn't as good with that. That's a learned skill on my side. How did you get better at differentiating who you should take advice from and where your education was coming from? Because I know we touched on this a little bit the first time, that you took advice from everyone, literally. And even when you were progressing, you were taking advice from people, even though Paul was telling you one thing, mm-hmm. somebody else was telling you something else. How did you just get better at that? Was it a case of, talk through your strategy for that, and then did it get easier over time? Because I think a lot of people want to know the 0 to 1 on that, but also the same as weight loss. I always tell people it's like pushing a tire up a hill. I'm like, it's very difficult at the start. You know, it's simple, like you said, Martin McDonald's, like, weight loss is very simple, but it's not easy. Like, you need to eat less calories than so you can tap into fat stores. It's effectively that straightforward, but there's the behavioral issues. It's like pushing a tire up a hill. Very difficult to push it up there, but easy to keep it at the top. I think disconnecting from the opinions of others is similar. What did yours look like, and how did your journey look like on that side?
Yeah, like you said, I think it's the 0 to 1. I think a lot of people maybe are very willing to take any information from anyone when they're in such a low place because they just want something to work. And Tommy down the road or Jane down the road says, well, such and such there now did X diet and, you know, walked 2,000 steps a day but did 1,500 push-ups. Worked for them. It's like, that's grand. I'm not them. For me, like, I remember I was told, you have to sprints. You have to sprints to lose weight. I'm like, why? Well, you do. It's the way things are. Yeah. It's like, okay, I didn't know that's how biochemistry or whatever it was works, but whatever. Well, that was 155 kilos. Sprints were really fucking difficult.
Mm.
And then worse again was like, well, uphill sprints now are better again. It's like, listen, pal, downhill sprints are fucking hard and I have gravity on my side there. But like, I suppose for me, once I just totally narrowed where I got that information. The likes of Paul, obviously, is my trainer. The likes of you, a couple of PT friends that I truly, truly trusted had best interests in heart and weren't, you know, totally connected to one way or the other. They weren't connected to certain diets. They weren't connected to certain training methods. They were willing to say, well, this is what you enjoy doing. Would you try doing, like, the push-pull legs thing? Yeah. And Paul was the same. And he was like, would you put yourself in their shoes? The person who's offering you this advice, like you said there, are they overweight? Have they ever trained? Did they just read this in a paper on Sunday, the, you know, the lifestyle magazine, and go, it's a great joke that, no, that CrossFit. You should do that. Go on, do a box jump there. Go on, not a bother to you. Like, that's not how it works. You have to find your thing, and you have to find the people you trust. And like I said, there's certain people online, never met, never spoke to, but I trust their opinion. Like, you've had Lane Norton on.
Yeah.
I love Lane Norton. Yeah. That dude is no bullshit, real educational, doesn't give a flying fuck, but everything he says is backed up.
Yeah.
And he breaks it down then for the dumbos, which is great. Yeah. Because otherwise I'd be totally lost, because he gets really scientific and then it's like, but he breaks it down in the next couple of snaps and you're like, that's brilliant kind of information. That's the kind of stuff that people need, rather than, you know, I don't want to mention the stuff, but drink, you know, certain teas and stuff, and like, yeah, that doesn't work. You see a lot of people, well, it does, but it doesn't work long term. It's not sustainable. And my issue with these things, you don't learn. Do you know, I've had a lot of people, like, and I tried it myself, drinking the shakes. And it's like, you know, you drink these things and it's like 900 calories a day. It's like, you're tired, you're lethargic, you're not happy. You learn nothing. Like, I've learned so much about food, about training, about movement, about the body and stuff over the last 2 years, that no matter where I go in the world, I can implement them. I could go on holiday and be in a hotel room and still work out a little bit if I wanted to, or, you know, eat relatively well if I made that decision to. Whereas, you know, if you don't put in the work, and I maybe look for these people, the likes of, you know, the good PTs, which are the nutritionists or whatever they are, you're not going to pick up those skills. And like I said, it's a life skill, you know, to be able to change your lifestyle and keep it relatively sustainable. But again, if you're taking information from Tommy down the road who played intermediate back in the 60s, you know, you have to question where that's going. Because like I said, if you wouldn't put yourself in their shoes, why would you take that kind of advice from them? You know,
there's a great line from Naval Ravikant. I know Paul's a massive fan of Naval as well, where he speaks that he talks a lot about finances and wealth and richness, and he has a great line on that: in 999 lifetimes, you should be able to, out of 1,000, you should be able to plant yourself anywhere in the world and get rich. And I think of something similar with us. That's the educational side. In 1,000 scenarios, you want to be able to get in good shape in 999 cases of those. And that's down to education. That's the difference between the shakes, the teas, the different quick fix diets. I'm like, ask yourself the question, and I think you're in this position now, that if you put yourself into 1,000 lifetimes, you get in good shape in 999 out of those, because you know what it takes now. You have the basic principles of calories, the basic principles of training, what your body needs. And I think it's a good question for people to ask themselves, especially if they're currently overweight: is what you're doing now replicatable over and over again, or is it a case that you're going back to rebound forward, to rebound back? And it's just not a good, useful approach. You mentioned life skills there. When I think of life skills, I think of education around nutrition, education around training. What's been the biggest life skill that you've acquired? And it may not be nutritionally, it may not be training, it might be something different, but over the last, since you've started your journey, you know, the last several years, particularly the last few months, because I think over the last 12, 18, 24 months, you probably learned more about yourself than at any other time because of where you were to where you are now. What's been the biggest life skill you've acquired?
It's personal responsibility. Is that one? Is that a life skill?
Yeah, yeah.
I suppose, like I said, like we said before, I blamed a lot of other things for where I was. Blamed work, blamed people, blamed the circle I was in. It was never my fault. It was never my fault I didn't train. It was never my fault I got the extra large garlic cheese chips. It was, well, because I went down there with Brian and Brian was getting chips, so fuck it, I had to get chips. And then I get all the stuff on top. Personal responsibility was a big one. Maybe a sense of self-value. I don't know, is that a skill or maybe a feeling? I think a realization of what's really important. I think COVID put that in perspective for a lot of people too. I think we turned into dicks during the boom. Yeah. I think we did, like, honestly, and I've said this a few times, I think people became dicks. And I understand money is massively important and everything like that, you know, for certain lifestyles. But all I want to do is sit on Shop Street outside a cafe and people watch. Yeah. and I can't do it. There's no people to watch. There's no cafes. And you don't realize these things until they're gone. It's like the gym. Like, the gym is so important for a mindset thing. And for some reason, the first two times in the lockdowns, I was okay. This time, I'm missing the gym massively.
Yeah, so time of the year as well, though. The winter, that...
It's the yo-yo effect of these lockdowns. It's like, oh, we're in of it, we're out of it, we're in of it, we're out of it. Yeah. But, yeah, I think just self-worth. I've gained a great understanding of myself, what I'm capable of, what my perceived limits were, and the fact that I was like, I have no idea. You know, I used to set all these ceilings for myself based on nothing. You know, you can't do
this. Based on behaviors, experiences.
Based on other people, I think. Okay. I think a lot of people would have said, you're not a runner. And I'm like, oh, yeah, I'm not. You're right. Without ever questioning it, because my own self-value was so low that I just assumed that Mike or John there knew best for me. It was the same thing with the advice, you know, taking it on board because I didn't know any better and I didn't think too much myself. Whereas as I started getting on the journey, it went from you can't to why couldn't I? And that's effectively why I took up running. And to be honest, it was a bit of a fuck you to not just other people, but to that inner voice in my head that was like, you can't run. I was like, fucking watch me.
When did you make that switch from the I can't to how can I? Or I like that, because that's a huge mindset shift in the sense that most of us, myself included, a time in my life when my default was either I can't, or I spoke about this in the book, you know this, that, or that's something other people do. That was my language on it. My language wasn't I can't. My language was putting it on to other people. When did that shift for you?
That was a big one for me as well. That's not the kind of, you know, that's something other people do, and I wouldn't be able for that. When did that switch?
Because it mightn't have been instant. It might have been, was it a gradual?
It was a gradual thing. I don't think there was any one point where I, you know, stood on a scale and saw a scale weight and went, oh, this is the thing I do, you know. Or there was no particular lift where I went, this is my thing now. You know, it was just a gradual, kind of a slow, gradual eye-opening where bit by bit I was getting better at certain things. My form was getting, my lifts were getting better. I was getting better in myself in the sense that I actually gave a shit. You know, like, and I say it a lot that there was years and years of little losses, you know, little tiny knocks. And it's the kind of thing that I don't think people might realize, because you might think of when you gain the weight as the main pinnacle where you're at the 155, 156 kilos and you go, that's the worst of it. But there was all these little things, all the little kicks.
What's an example of that. Some of those little losses?
Not fitting into my favorite jersey. I'll never forget the time I went into town to get Christmas, you know, the good Christmas clothes. And I went into a nice shop here in town and they were like, this no should fit you. And I went into the dressing room and it didn't. I got it to like just above my knee, and Thunder Thighs Griffin back then. It was never happening. I didn't even bother trying to get it on my waist because I was like, this could actually rip the pants. And I remember sitting there with tears in my eyes with herself outside the door going, are you finished yet? Or are you ready? And I'm like, yeah, just give us a second. You know, and it was those kind of knocks over time. I think, you know, bit by bit, they were chipping away at my, say, self-esteem, self-value. And I started to think, oh, it was the problem. I thought, you know, I was clearly there was something wrong with me that I was getting to this weight or size or whatever it was. And then that's on the flip is why I value little tiny wins so much. I think people, when they set to go about this, I've actually forgot what the initial question was. Yeah. When people set to go about these journeys, they have the peak of the mountain. You know, I want to see the view from the top. I want to climb Kilimanjaro and see what it looks like from there. But they don't think about how nice it might be on the way up.
Yeah.
You know, there could be a shitload of fog at the top of the mountain. You won't see shit. Mm-hmm. I remember, you know, Paul threw out a number when we started. And he was like 95 kilos. And we're like, we don't really know, but let's go over that. I got to 105 and I was pretty happy at 105. And I was like, 10 more kilos of a loss would be, I'm not saying substantial, I mean, it's doable, but it'd be strange for me. But I've enjoyed so many little things on the way to it. I've enjoyed going for the half marathons and 30Ks. I've enjoyed being able to go and buy a normal t-shirt. Like, I wasn't able to buy jerseys in shops. I had to get them online. And there's a certain, and this is going to sound ridiculous, nice feeling in knowing I can order a t-shirt online, look at the size guide and go, that'll fit. Whereas before, it was like, I might be a triple X, I might be a fucking 4X in that shirt if it's a slim fit. I blame One Direction for so much. All this skinny fit shit. I was not cool with it. That was not good for me when I was 25 stone. But there was a lot of like little kicks over time. So why, if you take these and you make a positive change for yourself, go and appreciate the little things when you're on the other side of the journey. You know, so yeah, I've no idea what the question was.
It gives me a actually perfect segue to what I wanted to touch on about one of the things I associate with you is those little wins and that mindset. I'm a long-time subscriber to tell me how you handle the little things, and I'll tell you how you'll handle the big things. What are some of the examples of your little wins for people that are have heard that and have been in the position where they have the little knocks, the micro knocks that by all means are brilliant? If at one point failure is really funny, because failure at a certain point is one step back for two steps forward, but when it's compounded negatively, where it's just constant small negative losses, like you said, like that can wreak havoc on your self-esteem. And one of the things I always talk with anyone I work with in that overweight community, I'm like, just because you're overweight doesn't make you a bad person. I'm like, it doesn't. It just means that you weigh more than the average person on a scale. I'm like, you're not a bad person. I'm like, just because you want that food and you're craving that food doesn't make you bad, but people can have that association with it. Yeah. And it's just, it's a complete disconnect from reality. But when you connect with it emotionally, when people connect with it emotionally, they tie the two things together. And I think that switch of focusing on the little wins, because that's what builds up to the mountaintop. Mm-hmm. You know, you're focusing on the journey as opposed to the destination. What are some of your examples of your little wins that you currently focus on?
They're going to sound so simple, and there'll be a huge chunk of listeners that just won't, this won't mean anything to them, but it was like being able to go up a flight of stairs. I was so unfit that the staircase at work used to cause me to stop at the top. If I was walking with somebody, I'd have to stop and like bullshit talk about something, because I was like, I just couldn't. And there was like maybe 25 steps. You know, those little things. I can go up and down a flight of stairs. I'll run up and down the steps. I'm like fucking Rocky. And it's like going for it. It's like going run up the stairs to my bedroom. I'm like, yes. You know, that the fact that I can just buy what I, and don't take this the wrong way, like normal size clothes, or what I used to perceive as normal size clothes, because I had to shop in, you know, big and tall or whatever it was, you know, being able to go into just Binnie's, buy a t-shirt. It's like, those are the kind of things, like they literally do bring a little smile to my face. Or the fact that I'm happy training, that it's not, because for a long time, I think I thought training had to be grueling and diet had to be horrible and tough and something that you didn't particularly enjoy, but you knew was going to make you lose weight. So you just did it and ultimately didn't do because it wasn't enjoyable. Whereas I kind of came to a realization that I've changed my lifestyle to the extent that it's normal for me now. It's not my new lifestyle. It's not my new diet. It's just the way I do things now. I go for walks. I walk around town. I'll get my steps in. You know, it's the days where you're at 7,000 steps and it's a bit of a dreary evening and you come in from work and you have the option. And there's nothing wrong with doing either of them. There's days when you need to sit down and have the cup of tea and watch EastEnders and whatever. Or you can go for your walk. And when you go for the walk, and it's happened to me where I've been 20 minutes in, I've kind of gone, this is a good shout. I was like, old me wouldn't have done this. Old me would have had rough day, sat down, ordered a pizza, you know. Whereas now I've gone out for the walk. I've got my meals prepped. They're in the freezer, or they're in the fridge, and they're ready to go when I come back in. This half an hour of a walk's not going to kill me. Do you know, there's loads of little things, just small decisions, small things that have added up, being able to just be happy in my own skin again, not be super conscious when I'm in public or sitting down around people. Like, you know, for years I'd sit there and I'd be fucking tugging at the t-shirt and making sure it's not catching anywhere. And, you know, it's just little things like that just make you feel happy, make you feel like you, like I feel like I'm me again. And that doesn't make sense to a lot of people, but I hid, and I'm not a naturally well-hidden person. At 25 stone, hiding was fucking hard because I'm 6'4", not exactly easy hide. But my personality, I was quiet, became really maybe sheltered in myself, whereas I've come back into my own again, you know.
I think for people listening, I think regardless of the goal, regardless of where people are, it's focusing on those little wins all the way through, and making note of them. I think if you're at the start of the journey, because you can forget how you felt once upon a time, like one of the reasons journaling is so powerful is you can look back at how you felt this time last year. It's like, oh, I wasn't as happy in this area of my life, or, you know, what was I doing when I was at my happiest?
It's funny you said it, because you know how Instagram does that, you know, your memory thing?
Yeah.
That popped up for me 2 or 3 days ago. It was my birthday 2 years ago. I had just maybe done 4 months of Paul. And it was a picture, we were in a hotel, and it was a shirt and pants. And I had lost, maybe 50 or 60 pounds at this stage. And it was, a nice shirt, and there were nice pants. And I remember sending it to Paul, and I was just so happy. And I was looking back, and I was like, I had forgot, because, like, you know, I can go and get, you know, the nice shirts now, and it's not as difficult. But I had forgot how big a win that was for me at the time to feel good, you know. And I understand it's superficial and it's all physical and that could all change tomorrow. But for a long time, I looked in the mirror and hated it. And this was like a selfie in the hotel mirror and I loved it. And I was like, it's good to, it's just funny you said it because it's good to have that little click back to where you were.
I love that. I'll never forget the message. I think, I don't know if I told you, my client Ashley, when I used to work one-to-one as a PT, very similar to your starting point, like our whole first hour when I was a one-to-one PT was just going up and down the stairs. And like, we did it like three times. Like there wasn't a lot of stairs. And then 9 months later, she'd lost so much weight. It was the first time she was able to go on a normal seat on an airplane and was able to fasten the seatbelt. And she's just sending me a photo of the seatbelt. I'm like, one of the best photos I've ever received as a coach. She was like, this is the first time ever I've been able to sit into an airplane seat and not have to order two seats. I'm like, it's things like that, you know, and she does CrossFit now. Like she's literally on that. She's on the other side
extreme.
Of it now. Yeah, it's just, it's amazing. I love that. I think that's why it's so motivating. And even this conversation, like I can't listen to this and listen to you and not get extremely lit up from your journey, from the way you put things across. Like that's what lights me up. It's why I love these conversations, which brings me on to my final question. And you're big on Instagram. This is where I know you've got a full-time job. It's kind of your side gig because you're doing podcasts, but you're on Instagram, you're active on Instagram. You know, you do your Q&As, you're putting up posts, you're motivating people. I'm curious, if you had access to everybody on Instagram where you could put out a post that was motivating or words that you live by, or a brain tattoo that you have, that if you had the access to absolutely every single user on Instagram, particularly those in the overweight community, that you could put one post, click, and it goes to everybody who's overweight all over the world, either a motivating message or something that would support them, what would you post?
Fuck you, Brian.
I haven't prepped you for any of this, by the way. So, no, but Steve has done all of this on the fly.
Oh, that's a difficult one. It's one of those that it's like, you know when somebody says you to say something in Irish, it's like, well, I have an entire language to choose from here, so I want to repeat. I think one of my favorite go-tos, it's a Jordan Peterson quote. It's don't hide baby monsters under the rug. Under the rug, they'll feed, they'll fester, and they'll keep growing. And by the time that they make themselves known to you again, they're huge, and you can't kill them anymore. And it's a little bit, it's gory, but if you kill the baby dragon or the baby monster, it can never grow to be a big monster. If you address the problem when it's small, instead of hiding it and running away from it, it might not get to the point where it's such a big monster that it drags you down and kills you. It's something that I've tried keeping in my own mind a lot. If there's something wrong and it's fixable, fix it. Whether it's my, you know, my head, body, diet, whatever. And I think that a lot of people leave things on the long finger a bit too long and it comes back to bite them on the ass. So I suppose that, or just the fact that you can do it. I mean, it's literally the only thing I ever want from Instagram. It's not that I don't care for Instagram. I obviously do. But if I had one follower and one like every week, but they took something from it and they learned from it and they sat there and said, do you know what? That guy was able to do it, so I can do it. There's no reason. Like, I was not a good advocate for weight loss, like at first, because I was like bad food routines. I had a really bad relationship with food. Didn't really understand training. I got to the point where I thought strongman's cool because they're fat and they lift heavy things, and it is cool, but I was using it as a justification to stay overweight. But if I can just show people that normal people that have jobs and responsibilities can do this, then it's totally worth it. And that's the thing, just you absolutely can. Might take a little bit of work, but you absolutely can.
Love it. What's the Instagram handle for everybody listening, because they're definitely going to go and check it out now?
Thank you. It's Steve's Weight Loss.
For everybody that got inspiration or is as motivated after this episode as I am, go check out Steve. Give him a follow on Instagram. Again, you're one of the pages that I haven't muted because I'm like, I love seeing Steve's stuff. I'm like, tell me what you're doing.
Good save.
Yeah, got it covered. And for everybody else listening, I will link up the Instagram page and any of the stuff and the resources we talked about today on BrianKeenFitness.com in the show notes and in the description for today's podcast. Steve, I love every single conversation we ever have on or off air. Mate, love this. Thank you so much again.
Thanks for having me.
So there you have it, Steve Griffin on losing 110 pounds, motivation versus discipline for weight loss, and building confidence and self-worth. I hope you enjoyed today's episode as much as I enjoyed recording it. I loved this catch-up. Again, conversation with Steve. Just very similar to when Trish is on the podcast. I literally have to cover the mic at times from just laughing out loud. So as I said, I hope you enjoyed it as much as I enjoyed recording it. As always, if you're a long time listening to the podcast, hit me up on Instagram. Let me know what you thought. Take a screenshot of it. Pop it up on your stories. Or if it's your first time listening, hit that follow or subscribe button for episodes coming every single Monday. Also, for those of you who are big email people, again, I'm not a big email person in the sense that I'm not subscribed to too many email lists, but three or four. If you like getting emails, I do a 3 email takeaway every single Thursday. So my top 3 takeaways from every single podcast that I do. So on Thursday at lunchtime, I'll be sending out the 3 takeaways from today's episode with Steve. So it'll have all the timestamps for everything we talked about today, but also my top 3 takeaways and the powerful quotes that came from Steve in today's episode. So if you want that, just head over to briankeenfitness.com on the homepage, scroll down to the newsletter and just pop your email in there. And then every Thursday at lunchtime, you will get my 3 email takeaway. So that's everything from this week's episode, this week's podcast. Hopefully you enjoyed. Catch you all on Monday.